Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Tuesday of every month from 2 to 3, it must be Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. Bob, how are you?
I'm fine, Dave. How are you?
I am good. It's so nice to see you again, and it's been a little while since I've seen you.
Yeah, I missed last month due to a family emergency, so thanks for putting a replay on.
Yeah, nice replay, and we call it in sports an instant replay. No, it wasn't. It was an hour long, actually. Erica
Young.
Yeah, and that was really good. I remember that show. That was excellent. So how have you been?
I'm doing well.
Very good. So yeah, we got a great show today, don't we? We have some really interesting topics that people will definitely want to hear about, learn about, and most importantly, implement in their life.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. As everybody watches the headlines today, you know, the U.S. debt is number one and forefront, right? Because that is the key news piece for the day, right? So trying to stay out of the political arena, which we'll try to do as best we can. I don't know if that's fully possible during this conversation.
But it's first and foremost in everyone's mind. I heard that if they don't raise the debt ceiling or come up with some agreement, then no Social Security checks and stuff like that. Is that true?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really interesting question.
Oh.
And from a financial planning standpoint, you know, what do you do if, you know, how do you manage portfolios into this uncertainty? Right.
You know, that's a good point.
Right. And what I'm doing is taking some of the risk off the table. But, you know, you have to sort of consider that of what, you know, what do any of these situations create? Because what I'm fearful of right now is no matter what you do, because I go back to, and this is where we'll go into the conversation of, you know, what the government's doing is what every individual has to consider. Right. So if you're struggling with debt, what could you do? You can go, right? So you can go get more money so you can work more, go get another job, get a part-time job, whatever the case may be. Or you can lower spending, right? Those are the two real things you do.
But not raise your credit limit.
But yeah, don't raise your credit limit. Yeah, don't call the credit card. Yeah, don't take out the credit card and add more debt to it because that usually doesn't help. But now you look at the government. But the government, that's interesting that you say raise the debt limit.
What they're saying, right?
Yeah, and they have the third option that we don't have. We can't go down into the basement. Well, Arizona doesn't have basements, but go down in the basement and start cranking up the machine to start printing money, right? Well, you can, but we're not going to go down that road.
It depends who you hang around with, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. From what I understand, you're printing out 20s on a regular basis.
But, you know, you're right. I mean, that is, you know, that's a really good point. Why, the government, I guess, is not a great role model for the citizens.
No, and it's interesting. What I'm seeing so often right now, and I think it's because of the news, is that I have people asking me similar questions multiple times over. Should I get rid of all my debt? And it's what they're typically talking about is their mortgage. So I have to assume they're hearing it from somewhere, and it has to be, you know, the government should have never had this debt. And so they're assuming that all debt is bad. And what I want to help individuals understand is that the process is individual. You have to look at your own specific situation. Because I've had people, I need to pay off the mortgage. And I'll ask them, how stable is your job? There's people getting laid off all the time. So you want to take your liquid asset, your emergency fund, and pay down a mortgage on an illiquid asset.
And try to convert it back. Good luck.
Right. Right. But I'm hearing that on a regular basis, and that sort of scares me.
You know, I agree with you. I think that's very scary. Now, it doesn't mean that under certain circumstances, if you have excess cash, that maybe it's a good deal, perhaps. But you're right. If you get rid of all your cash and convert it to something you can't get your hands on, in fact, maybe by all accounts, it looks like real estate prices may even take another dip with the shadow inventory. You just put money into an asset that's declining.
Right.
Oh, that's scary, right?
And you brought up a really interesting point. It may be the right situation for certain people, but I'm hearing too many people, it's just the blanket solution. And that's what we get too often. you know, tax advice. How many times do you hear tax advice? Somebody just gets on, you know, on the radio, like us, and just gives advice to everybody, right? There we go. And everybody just takes a blanket statement or television or whatever. I mean, the media is so hyped these days just to get information out because we have so many channels and everybody has to talk about things. So they have to have something to talk about, right? So how many times does somebody come in the office and go, Dave, I heard this. I think this is a good idea.
Yeah, and it's always, you're right, it's always specific to their own situation. I would never, as you wouldn't ever, give a general blanket advice to anyone,
right,
because one piece of other information can change at 180 degrees.
Yeah, because you brought up a good point. It may be a good decision for somebody, but you have to look at a few different things. Number one, a lot of rates, mortgage rates right now, they're probably 5% or, you know, I'm pretty comfortable beating that in the market over a longer period of time. Right. If you're up at 8-9%, then it's sort of a tough balance. And if it's, certainly if we're back in the 80s and it's well above that, then yeah, pay off debt.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, if it's a different type of debt, credit card debt at 12% or higher.
Or higher.
You know, then yeah, it's a slam dunk. You pay down your debt.
Yeah.
Right. But I watch people that come in and, you know, they're people that are doing conservative piece and they're saying, should I be paying off that debt? And I say, how much emergency fund do you have? And they don't have any.
So that's why people should talk to you. They need to have you on their team. And it just makes sense to have a team of professionals and definitely a financial planner, especially a fee-only financial planner.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the key pieces is to have a plan. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because that helps you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. Right? And that's, I just talked to a prospect this morning, a new client, and he didn't have a plan, and that's what he's like. I just need to know what to do when things happen.
Yeah.
And the best thing to do is have that plan before things happen, because we know how we do in emotional situations, right?
And a plan can often anticipate some of the things that can happen, because when you do the planning, you're saying, well, what's some of the things that could happen? So we're already ready to move on a dime if that happens. Like Tylenol, my understanding, when they had those tainted Tylenol pills long ago,
right,
they already had a plan for that.
Right.
They already knew what they would do.
Right. Yeah, they didn't have to think about it. They didn't have to get the team together. They just had the emergency plan right there, ready to go. And the moment that they heard any tainting, everything comes off the shelf. No questions asked. We'll deal with the repercussions later. We'd rather be safe, get them off the shelf, deal with the negative publicity later rather than. So, yeah. I totally agree.
And look, and they recovered pretty nicely.
Yeah.
Do you buy Tylenol? What do I buy?
I think my daughter does.
I think I buy Advil.
I think I usually use Advil, but I think for
all right,
I think
but
for
it
kids,
almost worked.
Yeah, for kids, children's Tylenol is a big one.
Hey, there you go. See, and then, you know, I'm sure it's been safe for a long time. So
yeah, and I think it was just one incident. Anyhow, I think they overdid it, but probably better to overdo than to.
Well, I would agree. So they probably came out stronger somehow,
right?
I suspect. So.
Right, and it's interesting you bring up the Tylenol scenario because that's sort of the fear based, right?
Yeah.
So they had a plan for fear. There's two things that I think of there. If even after 2008, I went back and looked at what a diversified portfolio would do, and even 2008, let's say you walked into a 60% stock and 40% bonds, a nice diversified portfolio, you started in 08, so the worst possible time, right? So you participated in 08, participated in 09, participated in 10, you're positive again.
Yeah.
Right?
See,
and people don't think that.
No, and if they had a plan, they might.
And they would have, because what you would have done is rebalanced, so you would have been buying the equities as they were falling and selling the bonds as they were going up, and then you'd have more equities while the equities were going up, and you'd have the bonds as they were going down, right? So that's a benefit.
I'm going to propose a plan with Bob Berger, though. Because, I mean, to have a plan, that's one thing, but you need an advisor to really understand the pulse of the market.
Right, and I think you have to have an advisor that also listens, whether it's me or somebody else, that really listens to the individual. I think that's one of the key pieces, is that you understand, and I tell clients that all the time, you know, just like you live in tax worlds, you probably use tax jargon and people say,
Code section 754, right. 743A, the adjustments.
Okay. Right, yeah, and they're like, Dave, what does that mean? Okay, and so I always tell people, if I start getting into jargon, just raise your hand, say, stop, stop, I don't know what you're talking about, please stop. And I think that's a good idea, you know, no matter what advisor you're working with.
Oh, yeah.
Because people do sell on fear. That's the other piece that I'm hearing a lot lately is annuities, especially variable annuities.
Oh, what do you hear about that?
They're being, you know, sold on fear. You know, did you, in 2008, you know, your stock market went down. If you had an annuity, you know, your principal's protected is the story. Well, I went back and looked. Well, most annuities are locked up for 7 years, right? So I went back and looked for seven-year periods. There were no negative periods.
Oh.
Even with 2008.
Really?
So you didn't need the protection, but that's how it's being sold.
So they're scaring people.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's how they're typically sold, because people are fearful, and that goes back to having a plan of why that makes sense. And unfortunately, the reason I missed last month was because of a death in the family, and they had a variable annuity. And you look at the death benefit, and it was like $2 more than the actual value. And of course, they paid a ton of fees. If you would have just invested straight out, you would have been further ahead anyhow.
Wow. See, there's a lot of things people have to consider. But you're right. Fear does it. And it seems like the whole world is based on fear, especially when the media talks about everything they talk about, the doom and the gloom. And I think it drives people nuts. And they make poor decisions then.
And then add the next two. If they have fear, and then they have greed. And then right now, we're just on hope. Right?
Yeah.
We're just hoping that the market turns around. And I think that's a lot of what we see. Is people are just, you know, hoping that the recovery will last.
Well, didn't the market sort of fall today because of this whole debt ceiling fear?
Yeah, and it's been bouncing around. And it's interesting for me to watch and not see the market even react more, because think about what has to happen. Okay, either side, again, without getting into politics, one side wants to cut spending. Okay, if we're in a recovery mode and we're in a questionable recovery mode, if we cut spending, what does that do to the recovery? Should slow it down, right?
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Right? The other camp wants to raise taxes.
Yeah.
Right? If we have more money coming out of pocket, what does that do to spending? And what does that do to the recovery?
Slows it down.
The other one is to print money, which eventually creates inflation, which slows things down.
So we're in a no-win situation, maybe.
Yeah, I think what I do think America wants to see is they just want a plan. It goes back to sort of the plan. They just want to see the government just do something. And I wrote about that in my most recent Cori letter. They just want them to say, okay, here is our plan. I think the uncertainty, the fear of not having any plan is worse than having at least something in place.
And I think some of the people out here, or maybe a lot of them, think that both sides might be, it's probably true. It's politically motivated. They may be doing things that actually harm people so they can position themselves for the next election, which is a horrible thing. I mean, it's just outrageous that could happen, but I'm sort of thinking that might be the case. And it's hard to believe that these grown men and women, allegedly with education,
right,
are doing just silly things like that.
Well, think about the conflict of interest. I've talked, you know, at length about the conflict of interest that advisors can be held to, you know, selling products.
That's right.
Well, think about the conflict of interest from a politician standpoint. What is their job? To get reelected.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you even know, and I'm not saying all politicians, just like all advisors aren't, you know, but you think about the conflict of interest that we've built into this system, right? If your job is to go get reelected because you're a career politician,
yeah,
do you want to come back to your constituents and say, yeah, I cut your Social Security, and we know that the elderly tend to vote more than the young, right?
Right,
so
right.
Do you want to do that? Or I raised your taxes. Who wants to do that? So there's a huge conflict of interest, in my opinion, of the people, even if they know it's the right thing. And looking from the outside, and this is obviously just my opinion, but I think you have to do some of both, right?
Yeah.
Just like in a personal plan, you can't do one or the other. You can't just go get more money, and you can't just do it on spending, because if you do one or just do one, it hurts a lot.
Yeah.
Right? You're better off doing some of both.
No doubt about it.
Right. So, yeah, I agree. I think that there it's just some grandstanding. And an economist that I read and listen to quite a bit, he had a great quote. He said, the politicians, both parties, are going to have to stand at the edge, hold hands, and jump off together, right? Because then you take away the risk of getting reelected, because everybody did the same thing. The other risk is that the public finally says enough of all you guys.
Yeah.
And everybody's out.
Might be a good idea. I'm voting for that one, actually, because it's going to be serious. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Bob Berger. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger, and we'll be right back.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. Did you like how I said that? Reaching. And it's not really that much of a stretch. You just have to get out there and be consciously aware and plan like we've been talking about. And be, you know, awareness is such a big key.
Yeah, I think obviously the government has shown that kicking it down the road, you know, that's probably the phrase of the year, kicking it down the road. You know, we heard about this scenario. We knew that we were going to run into problems when the baby boomers came because of Social Security and Medicare. I mean, Clinton talked about it. Bush talked about it. And now, you know, when Standard & Poor's downgraded their outlook, that's what raised this whole big flag. Standard & Poor's said, you know, you went from stable to negative, and all of a sudden the politicians said, uh-oh, we better do something. Whoa. And now it's come front and center. And although it is, you know, politically charged, I don't disagree with that. It's been a matter of just kicking it down the road way too long. And that's part of what I want to help individuals understand. And I see it too often. People show up at the office when they're 63 years old, hoping to create this miracle that they can retire with some lavish lifestyle. And they haven't done anything because they just figured they'll get to it someday.
And a lot of people that have even, they were on their way. I mean, I guess with the economy the way it's as created even a more urgent need for planning, even people that were sort of on the path. The economy is so uncertain. That's why it's really important to keep that plan and monitor it very, very closely.
Right. And, yeah, and it goes back to having the plan and knowing what you're going to do. Like you mentioned the Tylenol story. Know what you're going to do when that happens and what adjustments you're going to make if something goes, you know, against you. That's one of the things that I see a lot out there sold as no risk. There's always risk. It's just a matter of which risk you're, you know, negotiating, right?
Yeah.
Because you can sit in a CD or money market paying literally nothing right now, and there's no market risk, but there's certainly inflation risk, purchasing power risk.
Yeah.
Right? So how are you going to reach your goals? You know, that's why we always talk about reaching your goals.
That's
that,
right.
That should be the driving force behind the plan. And I'm just fearful too many people are doing just like, so the government is a great example of what not to do right now. Don't wait until your back is against the wall and try to figure out what to do.
It's too complex, too. I mean, look at this last minute. I think he said August 2nd or something, where, you know, if it's not resolved by that day, then maybe Social Security checks or something aren't going out, maybe benefits to military. I don't know, something like that. But I was curious if there's an emergency fund or something, or something the president can say, no, I'm going to declare martial law. Or, you know, I mean, that would be horrible. If I mean, that would be, I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, I don't know the details of that, but imagine if you're an individual and you've run out of money. Let's say you're 75 years old and you run into the same scenario.
Yeah.
Right? Your debt's too high. You ran out of money. Nobody's raising your debt ceiling. Guess what? You don't get a do-over like the government's going to get. Right? So, and that's the key piece here of the conversation is, as we watch the U.S. government, what they're doing, I think it's really valuable from the individual standpoint to make sure they don't do the same thing. Pay attention, because this could have been done so differently.
Oh, no question.
Right.
So what, I mean, a little off topic, but I am curious, and I think a lot of people are, what's your greatest prediction? I mean, you got like two parties in different cars, and they're going full speed at each other. Who moves first, or what happens? I mean, are they all just positioning themselves for publicity reasons? Or I can't imagine a winner coming out of this.
I agree. I don't think anybody wins out of this. And I heard a great quote: "They're playing chicken with each other." So who?
Yeah,
so your
I
scenario.
Heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So who is going to turn? I don't know. And to me, I don't think it really matters who turns. I think they're both creating, you know, sort of the black eye for themselves on both sides, because you have to work together. And that's where I think, you know, we're going obviously down politics a lot more than we'd hope. But, you know, people, you know, it was supposed to be, you know, when the founding fathers talked about it, they said, you know, it was supposed to be about service. And that's where I talk about that conflict of interest.
Right.
Is that you weren't supposed to be a career politician.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, I think.
Right. So what? Who bends? I don't know. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens. And this is another interesting point, is that because we don't know, and we never know with any certainty of pretty much anything in life, you know, other than, I guess, taxes and death is what they always say, right?
But yeah.
What's going to happen when they do come to a resolution? Do the markets go straight up? Do they fall? I don't know. And that's why we never recommend just getting out of the market, because
you really don't know
as much as you think. Because a great recent example of this was the end of the quantitative easing part two, right? The government just was buying $600 billion worth of bonds, treasury bonds, over the last, 8 months.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, everybody assumed when that came to an end, interest rates had to go up, right? Because the government's, all of a sudden, the biggest buyer of bonds goes, I'm not buying anymore. And what ended up happening, the rates went down.
Really? Right. So it went the opposite of what
it went the
thought.
Opposite. So it goes back to, because now you have people, of course, you don't know what else is going on in the world. Now people are afraid of equities or stocks. So they're going to. So you never know. So that's one of the key pieces I think people should be aware of, is don't assume you know what is going to happen, because in many cases it doesn't happen the way you thought it was going to happen, and understand the risks of being wrong.
You need exit strategies and various different ways of looking at things. So, yeah, I agree with you totally. And, wow, we should have a poll on what's going to happen. I you know, when you get a bunch of greedy politicians with ego and aspirations of power, I just can't see anyone backing off. I mean, but someone will. You know what it'll turn out to be? Hey, you've heard it here first. Let's see what Kurt thinks about this. Remember the story, was it Solomon? With the mother and the baby? Or is it King David? Kurt, which one? The two mothers claim they had the baby and...
King Solomon.
See, wow, I'm good at this. All right. Shocked me. But I think See what you think, and then we'll move on to the topic. But I think this is interesting.
Right?
Remember that story? Is the two mothers claim the baby, and they both said it was their baby, and King Solomon, with his wisdom, said, "Okay, I'll cut the baby in half." I believe how the story goes, right, Kurt? Yeah, he's shaking his head. And I'll give you both half. But so one of them said, "No, you take the baby," and that was the real mom. So that was the one with compassion. So I'm going to say it here. I'm predicting it here. The party that backs down. Well, maybe that's a little strong. But you just watch for the compassion part, because you certainly don't want people not getting their Social Security checks. I mean, right? I mean,
right.
You don't want that, do you?
Right. And then you're back to driven by fear.
Oh, yeah,
right? Because somebody is going to pull that card and say, if you don't do this, they'll parade, senior citizens out on right on television or wherever. I will be starving if you don't give me my check.
Yeah.
They'll do it.
Why? There's got to be some emergency fund situation.
Probably.
But we'll have to check into that. Yeah. Wow, interesting. You brought up a great topic.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. And, it's interesting for me to watch, because I always bring that back to the individual.
Yeah.
And why didn't they do something sooner? And that's what I'm going to, challenge individuals to do, is look today while you still have choices. You know, we talk about this all the time. The younger you are, the more choices you have. And in a financial plan, there's so many more choices than just investments. You know, your savings and spending, of course, is what got us here. You know, savings and spending, how long you work, how much you're paid to work, so your human capital, and then finally your investments.
Yeah.
And the investments are the ones you have the least amount of control over, and that's where most people want to get the most bang for their buck during their individual financial plan.
It makes sense. Wow. So that's it is sort of concerning. I was going to say scary, but we want to get away from the fear.
Yeah.
But it is concerning, and people should take responsibility. That's really the theme of the show today.
Yeah, it is. It's taking accountability for, where you are. People, when they get to retirement, and if you don't have enough, you bring up an interesting for the accountability. I love the idea. I think it's interesting, the idea that they keep calling Social Security an entitlement. As far as I'm as far as I've known, they keep taking Social Security money out of my paycheck.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm not quite sure it's an entitlement, because to me, an entitlement seems to be something that I didn't pay into.
Yeah.
And I'm just supposed to get, right? So that's sort of an interesting piece as well, that they keep using that word entitlement for Social Security. I'm like, I thought I paid into this program.
Well, they sort of spin it the way they want, right?
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
And that's going down that road. It's interesting. It'd be very, I have never run the numbers, and maybe somebody has, but it'd be interesting if they took all the money that was contributed into Social Security and had invested it a different way. Let's say just a bland 60-40 portfolio, with 60% being the S&P 500 index and 40% being the Lehman bond aggregate, whatever. Okay, so an index fund, not even getting complicated in value or small cap or anything like that. I'd have to wonder, if you took all that money and invested it over the time that you contributed, would you have created enough money to pay the fees that you're due?
That's interesting.
Right? And the reason I think of that is, from an individual standpoint, if you sit there and don't do anything until you're age 63 and then hope to keep, then hope to make up for that, you're not going to make it. And that's sort of where I think we got to this from the Social Security, is we never invested the way we should have. And there's stories, and I'm not sure what's true and what's not, but, they loaned it to other departments and never invested it, But it'd be interesting if somebody did that study, if they just saw how much money came in, it took the return of a 60-40 portfolio where most people line up, and see what the balance would be today.
And I guess if they did a little planning, like you were talking about, they might look at it that more people are, the baby boomers, I mean, they're getting a great share of Social Security now, and it's just, right? That's sort of the problem, isn't it?
That's the problem. It's for the first time I don't know if it's this year, we're coming up on it, where we have more people taking from than paying into.
Yeah.
That's the big struggle. At some point here, we run into that scenario.
So that, you figure with a little planning, they may have saw that coming, right?
Yeah, you would. And, like we said earlier, Clinton talked about that. Bush talked about that. They all said, hey, this is coming. We need to address this. And nobody wanted to touch it until it had to be addressed. And that's, going back to where we want to be for the individuals. Address it while you can.
It was like what Bill Maher said. Ever hear of Bill Maher? He's a political. What is that? He used to be a, politically incorrect or real time now. He's funny. He's very liberal. And what was interesting, he said that, well, because he was defending Obama, actually. Mm-hmm. So what was that? And he had Ann Coulter on the show, who's incredibly conservative. Have you seen her?
I know who she is.
And you want to hear something else? I think they were married at one time, he implied. That's weird, isn't it?
No.
That type of extreme. But what he was saying to Ann Coulter is that Bush, he ran up the tab, and it's like going to dinner and then leaving, and Obama picks up the check. I don't know. It was just a sort of a funny thing, but that's his humor.
Well, that's interesting because if you go back to Clinton, they said the balanced budget. What they expected, and I take this out of Greenspan's book, because they had so much extra money coming in, and it was because of the bubble that happened in the late 90s, they never expected to have all this money because where did the money come from? It wasn't from income. It was from people cashing in their stock options and paying the taxes on that. So you had all this extra money that they had. So when they built in, they go, we've got all this extra money. What do we do? Like too many Americans, we have extra money. Do we save
spend it?
We spend it. Exactly. So we spend it. And then because we assume, we know where that gets us. So we assume that this money is going to keep coming in. So Bush comes in and says, we've got all this extra money. Let's cut the taxes. And then the other side's also trying to increase spending. And then, of course, 9/11 tragically happens.
Yeah.
And, then we're back to square one. We were really close to being at a good spot there. And that's another piece from the individual. If you're at that point where you can start putting money away, put it away. Don't just go spend more.
So it's behavioral discipline. It's looking at also thinking styles and really standard of living. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Bob Berger, Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. A little bit of a political commentary that I sort of threw in, but we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. We've been talking a lot about accountability and responsibility, none of which the government has learned yet is what we're discovering. It's like two trains coming at each other, and will they collide on August 2nd and really bring down the U.S. economy? Wow, that sounds interesting.
Right, and as we were talking off air, there's just too many people that also do that, and they don't get the bailout. Right, that's one of the biggest things when things
go wrong.
Things go wrong in the government. There's a way to bail out. Think about Greece right now.
Oh yeah, what's going on there?
So that, I mean, that's another, you know, that's probably another good way for the U.S. to see what's going to happen, because we're different, but we're not that far behind in many ways of what did Greece do, and you know, they're basically in default. I read a headline today that the European Union was considering letting them default. What does
really?
That do? Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I didn't read the whole article, and I don't know who wrote it, so we always have to be careful of who says things. But, you know, at what point, you know, I'll go into one of your topics that you like, the coyotes.
Yeah.
Right? Think about that. Do they have a plan still? Right? They didn't want to raise the bonds. Now we're really going off topic, but for a while there, they didn't want to pay, you know, Goldwater got into it and they didn't want to issue the bonds. But in the end, and you follow this a lot more than I do, obviously, but didn't they just give the NHL like $25 million and said, here you go, here's a check for $25 million, thank you for playing. So let's see how they didn't have a plan. So they said that we want the Coyotes here, we don't want to take the risk of the bonds, so we understand that risk, but we'll just give you $25 million with pretty much no hope of getting any of that back. So how is that good for the taxpayer?
Yeah, what happened? You're right. I haven't heard Goldwater chime in on that one, but basically, you're right. The threat of a lawsuit from the Goldwater Institute against the city of Glendale if they went through with the bond deal, which raised the interest rate, which made it difficult to even sell the bonds. So that was a problem. But you're right. $25 million approved by the city of Glendale to keep to really cover losses, a fee basically to the National Hockey League to run the team at least one more year, hoping they'll find an owner. And I do hope they do, but Holzhauser is out, a little update. So yeah, he's decided no mas, as they say in boxing.
And isn't this the second year they've done that?
It's up to 50 now. And, it's an interesting situation. They won't be going to Winnipeg, though. Do you know why?
Right, because Atlanta's going up there, right?
Wow. But. And guess who the first home game is with?
Coyotes?
Winnipeg.
Ah, okay.
You got to go to that one.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
But anyway, let me ask you this question, and then we can get into other topics here. But if the U.S. does default, what does that do to the world economy?
Yeah,
that's bad, right?
We have no idea. And that's one of the big questions for Greece, too. You know, could we let Greece? We'll go back to things we do know. Okay, we let Lehman fail, we let Lehman fail. And what did that have the consequence of doing, right? We never knew how far the tentacles were of the Lehman piece. And it almost took down the whole entire banking system, right? So, you know, and that becomes the question of who fails and who doesn't. That's why Greece is a really interesting piece right now. If you let them fail, do you have to let Ireland fail? Do you have to let Portugal fail? Spain fail? Italy fail? Who doesn't have to fail, right? So you have to set a precedent somewhere along the line. We don't know, and that's the key piece. You know, I think a lot of people would say, okay, let Greece fail, but we don't know what the consequence is beyond just having Greece fail. So if the U.S. went into default, obviously we pay more for debt, okay? So the debt that we have, if we get into a situation where our credit rating drops, we pay more for debt because that means our interest rate has to go through. It's a cost of capital and risk scenario. So just think of what we're paying for debt now. Imagine if we had to double the interest rate.
Ooh.
Right? So that's a big struggle. And it goes back to the same thing with the individual. You know, if you think of a house right now, if somebody's still sitting in an adjustable rate mortgage, which I don't know why you would, but if you had to do that and you're barely making ends meet and we have rates come up, what does that do to you?
Bad.
Right?
Could be bad. Right. On fixed income, especially.
Yeah, so that's the key question for the United States. What is going to happen? I don't think anybody knows, and the unknown is pretty scary.
I think Warren Buffett buys the United States. That's what I think.
There you go. That he might bought Goldman Sachs pretty much the last time around.
Yeah, he did.
Right. So yeah, you could just bail him out.
Wow, how come we don't elect him for being president or something, right?
Would that, you know, obviously a political thing again, but it would be very interesting to have somebody that's more business-minded rather than, and, you know, not to pick on current people that are in offices or whatever, but that's sort of what we were hoping for, right, was change. That, yeah. That was the whole political, well, that was the term, right? Yeah. And unfortunately, I don't think we got the change that
I don't
we
think
wanted.
There was. It was sort of more of the same.
Right, right. And maybe that's just the way Washington's built.
You know, I think it is in the fabric there, and it's unfortunate, and I don't know. I the public's getting really fed up, though.
Yeah, exactly.
On both sides, I think.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, yeah, people just want you to do your job. I mean, 'cause imagine if we went into work and we just didn't do what we were supposed to do and just fought all day. You know, how long would we have a job?
Not very long.
Right?
Yeah. Like if Kurt argued with me all day, that would be horrible.
Right.
But he never does. He's so delightful, and he's always inspiring, motivating, and uplifting. Okay, there's my plug for Kurt. Thank you. He's giving himself a round of applause. So, all right, so now another big topic.
Yeah, another topic where I see people struggling with accountability on a regular basis is as they go through divorce.
Which I bet is sort of big. I bet there's a lot of stress on relationships, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we always, sort of the common theme on any divorce, what are the important pieces of divorce? Money and kids, right?
Yeah.
So those.
In that order, or maybe not?
Yeah, it might be the other way. Who knows? You know, kids equal money, money equal kids. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. As you know, we've talked at various times about the divorce work that I do, and what I help people do is understand the finances of what their financial life will look like after divorce. And I've been doing this for, I don't know, going on about 3 years now, and it really surprises me how many people go through divorce, which I think is probably one of the biggest financial decisions of their life, without even understanding what the financial picture looks like. They don't understand where they are right now, and more importantly, they don't understand what their financial life will look like later. And that goes back to the accountability. The whole theme of this, you know, this discussion is taking accountability. And it just amazed me how many people sign a piece of paper and move on. And just, again, going back to hope, you know, divorce is interesting because you have all those three emotions. You know, you hope you'll be okay. But while you're going through the process, what I see more is everybody's driven by fear.
Yeah.
Fear that I won't have enough money. You know, I'm going to be living in a box. And then I see the other side, the higher wage earner, fearful that I would like to help the lower wage earner. But if I give more, then I'm going to be the one living in a box. So you have to show the numbers to say you both will be okay. And I read a lot of articles. I see a lot of articles that talk about, and you probably see this in the text, oh, my spouse is hiding the money. And, you know, again, the media sensation that it's hard to hide money unless you're dealing with some cash, you know, business or something. I mean, you can look at a tax return, especially for a W-2. It's really hard to hide money, right? But so many people walk in the door saying, I'm convinced my husband or my wife is hiding money. Well, what do they do for a job? Oh, they work at XYZ company. I'm like, okay, so they're a W-2. So you can see what they brought in, where you spent the money. Tell me again why you think they're hiding. I don't know. I just read articles that people, you know, hide money. I'm like, okay. So, you know, again, going back to the accountability, find out what you really need out of the divorce rather than fighting over things that you don't. But
there's no doubt about it. And it's such an emotional issue. And, of course, people sometimes have so much pain over it, they just want to get out at all cost. And then they look back and go, ooh, this is a lot of cost.
Or they make decisions. Yeah, that is absolutely. And we talk, and I've written an article. I think it's on, you know, a fellow friend's website, Leah Haben from SmartFemme. I think I wrote the article. I think I posted it there. It is talking about divorce being an investment rather than an expense. Because so many people walk in the door. So again, take accountability for what your life is going to, and take accountability for your divorce, right? Because people just want to get it over with. Like you said, so, or they just, okay, here's the attorney, and I'm not picking on attorneys, because, you know, I work with a lot of attorneys, and a lot of them do a really good job, but they expect the attorney just to take over for them, and they don't want to have any input. Well, it was your divorce.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you have the input on how it comes out?
Absolutely.
Right? But this is another place where I see very little accountability. Just let people, we'll wing it as we get there.
They don't take charge, right?
Right. Yeah. It just amazes me that, like I said, it's one of the biggest financial decisions, and you just want to hand it over to a judge or an attorney and let them do the fighting. And one of the greatest quotes I heard from a judge or from an attorney, and they said to their client or the other client, what if the judge doesn't agree with you?
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what a lot of people walk into court doing. They're saying, well, I'm definitely going to get the kids. I'm definitely going to get this amount of – how could I not? What if the judge doesn't agree with you?
You know, it's interesting. Also, you said earlier, and we'll take a break in about 30 seconds to that, money equals kids, kids equal money. And I think a lot of sadly, a lot of parents in the middle of a divorce, part of their calculation on how much time they want to spend with the kids is child support.
And that's
do you see that?
It's absolutely, and that's why in the collaborative model, which I'm a very big advocate, we'll get into that after the break.
Yeah, I think that's very important. So stay tuned for that because it's very, very important, especially with today's economy, putting so much stress on relationships. You find a lot of, sadly, maybe divorce attorneys really wiping up right now. But there's another option. We're going to hear from Bob Berger on that. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911? The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. And wow, this has been a quick show. We're almost, we have about 12, 13 minutes left. And we've talked a lot about everything.
We were
everything under the sun except, even sports we did, didn't we?
Yeah, we were talking about holding accountability for the financial plan, and we got caught off on the political tangent. But that's it's an interesting topic, and it'll be interesting by the time next month comes around to see what has happened, because something will happen before then, right?
Well, it's got to. Yeah, you can't wait till August 1st at midnight or whatever.
Right. So it'll be interesting. As we were talking off air, I don't know how any of the solutions turn out well. And I'm sort of I'm really interested on why the markets just seem to be floating along thinking that this is okay. I don't know. And again, that's why I don't take money out of the market. I don't know with any certainty, but I just find it very interesting.
Well, it is. And I think there's a movie deal here.
Yeah, probably.
I'm going to vote for you for president.
Yeah, I can't do the vetting process.
So divorce, we are talking a little bit about divorce and taking accountability for your own divorce. And you were going to talk about a different model.
Yeah, I think
that really you're involved in that, I think, is well worth it.
Yeah, I think it's very important for people.
And the audience went crazy over here. What, are you singing like Elvis now? Oh, another one.
Oh. And that's one of the things I think is so important from accountability standpoint from a divorce is understand the different ways to divorce and find out what's best for you. My preference of some version, it doesn't have to be a full team model, of the collaborative divorce, which means that you're getting emotional help, you're getting legal help, you're getting financial help, and you're getting help with the parenting plan. And it's from professionals that operate in their area of expertise. Again, the mutual friend Leah Haben and her group SmartFem, I just posted an article on her site and talked about the four pieces of divorce. And what's interesting to me as I go through this is the two pieces that have the most limited amount of time, legal and emotional. Okay, so legal, when you sign the dotted line, it's over, right? You sign the decree, you're officially divorced, and you move on with your life. The other one is emotional. Most people get some kind of support, whether it's family, friends, church, yeah, whatever. And I don't want to say time heals all wounds, but it certainly dampens them, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that, most people get help there. But how many people walk out of the court or wherever they were not understanding where the financial piece is and not understanding a good co-parenting agreement? You know, I see all kinds of things, and, you know, I talk to a lot of child specialists. Some people come to me and say, Monday, Tuesday at mom's, Wednesday, Thursday at dad's, every other weekend. And I ask them how old the kids are and if the kids are of age that they can voice an opinion. I go, what do the kids think?
Yeah.
And they look at me with this blank stare.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's...
A 4-year-old, that might be a good solution.
Yeah.
A 14-year-old is probably not going to be wanting to bounce back and forth every other day.
No, and I think at 14, the courts do weigh in on their opinion, too,
right.
I believe.
And that's an interesting comment, because do you really want, this goes back to the accountability of the divorce, do you want the courts to be making the decision, or do you want to make the decision? And that's what always, it amazes me after 3 years of doing this, of how many times the couples just don't want to take the accountability for their own divorce. Yeah. They want to leave it up to the court, and I just don't understand why somebody would want to do that. Why somebody wouldn't want to talk to a parenting specialist just to get a second opinion. You may have the greatest solution. Another one I hear a lot is, well, we'll split Christmas. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So the kid's going to be at mom's house on Christmas morning and dad's at Christmas. That may work well for the first Christmas, but what about 3 years down the road when you want to travel across the country to visit family? You hear this, and so simple things that seem so rational to us because we're not emotionally involved, people come to the table with that all the time.
And if they don't think that's true, I have firsthand experience. I was in a situation like that a long time ago, and the both attorneys were all sitting there together. The attorneys were arguing over what holidays. I looked at my soon-to-be ex, and I said, well, we don't really care. We said do what you want. That was our first mistake. So the attorneys were fighting. And they go, no. Let's stop the fighting. This is how we want it. No. We're going to fight it out.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right.
So you have a much better model. It's even beyond. Is it sort of like mediation, but not?
Interesting question, because, yes, in some ways, the common theme is that you make the decisions, but the struggle here is that a mediator, even though it's usually a family law attorney, is usually who I'd recommend you mediate with, because then they can draft the document. Keep in mind, the mediator's role is to get an agreement. They can't advocate for either side, right? So they could see something that they don't like,
right?
But they can't say anything, right? Because it's their job to come to a resolution.
Good point.
And I think mediation is a great solution if you have equals. So if you have equals in financial knowledge, if you have equals in temperament, or, you know, think about it, if you went through a divorce where one person was sort of the bully, for lack of a better word. Do you think they're going to be the bully through the mediation process? Probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if somebody's used to being bullied, they're probably not going to find their voice. Right? So
that's
they're never
going
to speak up. So although it's a less expensive, I don't know if it's a better way, because you don't get the help that you need. And that's, you know, goes back to the accountability of the divorce piece. It just still amazes me that people don't want to take responsibility just like the government has not, you know, hasn't taken responsibility. Take responsibility of this important time of your life. Get all the help you need from these experts in each of the fields. So don't let your attorney do your financial planning. And don't let the financial planner do your legal work, right?
There's no question about it. So this new model, is this a new model or is it a model that's been around but no one knows about?
It's been around for quite a while. And, you know, collaborative law has been around, you know, for, I don't know what the, for how long. It's been around for quite a long time. It's just the main piece is that people need to know more about it. And that's our job from the people that do collaborative divorce is that, because when you talk to people, people understand that sounds good. I can walk away from a divorce knowing what my kids think about the divorce process. I get to hear what they think. I get to see in black and white what my financial picture will look like after this is all done, based on assumptions, of course, of growth and things like that. But, okay, so now I know what my parenting plan is going to look like. I know what my financial – I got my voice if I didn't have a voice before, so I understand. And especially when you're going to be parents, isn't it better to go through the process and learn to talk to each other? Because you're going to have to talk to each other the rest of your lives, whether you want to or not, right? So at least through this process, if you can learn to listen and you can learn to hear, that is a great component. And then the legal piece, I ask people a lot of times, would you like to be in the same room and your spouse's attorney, would you like to hear what they're saying? And most people go, yeah, that would probably be good. Well, that's part of the model where it's transparent. Everything is there for you to see, and you, the couple, make the decisions rather than somebody else making the decisions for you, and you make educated decisions.
And it's probably better for the kids, too.
Yeah, it has to be better for the kids because, you know, divorce has to be, you know, traumatic no matter what the piece is. But if you're not making it a fight, if you're working together and, you know, it's, you know, hey, Susie, we're getting divorced and, you know, but we're working together and we want to make sure that this, you know, it's in the best interest of you and you're at the front of our thoughts, that has to be better for the kids.
No question. And I suspect it's more cost effective, the whole process.
That's the interesting piece. Compared to adversarial, I would say yes. And I think that's one of our roles is that we need to find a way to make it even more cost-effective.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have a lot of professionals involved, so it could be costly, but I think it's our job to find out what the couple really needs and provide that and provide it with the specialists that do it working with that in that area only. So, and we're working on that as far as the groups in Phoenix, and I think that will really help because I don't think anybody would argue it's a better way to divorce. You know, if there's a good way to divorce, that's the good way to divorce, right? But, you know, to be able to move on with your life knowing the key pieces of financial, the parenting, emotional, legal, if you can walk away understanding all that. And the other piece I think of is if you don't understand that, what's the likelihood you're going to be back in court?
Well, that's true.
Right. And what expense is that incur, right?
That's why it may be more cost effective in the long run if you look at it that way. And yeah, I think there's just so many options that people aren't aware of, and they go to the traditional way, and the traditional way is, you know, battle it out. And I don't know, you know, what's the cost on your emotions of that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, we're talking about financial costs, but certainly the emotional piece, you know, especially if you have kids, you know, what's the emotional cost of not being invited to the wedding? You know,
yeah.
And that happens.
That's right.
Right. What does that cost you?
It could be, you know, and then the related effects too. I mean, the emotional could impact your job and your opportunity. So it is huge. And so let's give out some contact information. How do they get in touch with you? This is really an interesting model.
Yeah, they call me directly at 602-235-0336, or they can email me at bob@moneyaz.com.
I love your email.
Moneyaz.com.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is you need to do some consulting with the Democrats and Republicans now.
Yeah, and it goes back to, you know, take accountability no matter what the aspect. And, you know, we talked about a couple of the different, you know, we're pointing fingers at a few people not taking accountability. But, you know, the goal of the discussion was to help people understand that you have to take accountability when you go through these financial pieces of your life, whether it is trying to reach retirement or whatever the case may be, or a divorce, unfortunately. You have to take responsibility.
Absolutely. Bob Berger, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you later. And stay tuned for Understanding Autism right up at 3 o'clock. See you then.